At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Grandling. I am joined by Jenny Vrentis of the Weekside Podcast. And Jenny, we are going to open with the big move that the Eagles made this week, which, as we all know, is moving Jannard Avery from defensive line to linebacker, the defensive player they acquired for their upcoming fourth round pick. I will say, though, Andy and I used to talk about Jannard Avery every once in a while. We both like him. We both think he's a good player.
So maybe that is the headline.
Yeah.
This is a podcast that really delves into the unexpected. It picks unique angles, really, you know, really picks apart other parts of the game that others might not see. So, Gary, I think this is a great lead-in.
4.5 hours on Jannard Avery. Settle in, everyone. No, we are going to talk Carson Wentz. We're also going to talk the rest of this quarterback market, which is, it feels unusual right now. We'll talk about whether it really is unusual. I mean, it's unusual. There are a lot more guys out there, but I think there's a certain amount of panic setting in with some teams, and we'll kind of talk about whether they should be panicky. I think they should be panicky. I think Jenny's a little more level-headed about this whole thing, which is why she'd make a much more better general manager than me if someone's looking to hire one.
Hopefully it makes for a decent podcast episode, though.
We're about to find out. So we have Carson Wentz. Finally, we get resolution on this. I mean, it only went on for like 2 weeks, but it felt like, I don't know, just an absolute eternity from the time where the Eagles kind of came out before Super Bowl and said, okay, Carson Wentz is they didn't come out and say it, but reports came out that Carson Wentz was going to be dealt imminently and the Eagles were expecting a Matthew Stafford-type package, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, that was not really realistic at all. And when it came right down to it, it was really only one suitor. Now, maybe later in the offseason, other teams would have gotten in on it. But the one thing that kind of stuck out to me after thinking about this nonstop for 3 days as I stared into the middle distance is Carson Wentz was not in a position to sort of dictate where he was going to go. But in a way, he was. And he did end up going to the place where he wanted to go, which was Indianapolis. You know, we heard a lot of reports that the Bears were interested. Bears were ready to sort of, you know, they're in a position where they really have to go back to the postseason this year. And they were willing to take a chance here. And it sounded like through back channels, Wentz had sort of made clear that he maybe wasn't too excited to go to another team that really doesn't have a great supporting cast, and it's unclear whether they'll bring Allen Robinson back, and, you know, they're kind of in the same sort of desperation that maybe the Eagles were in a year ago. So, in the end, you know, the Bears kind of said, you know, who wants to go get a quarterback who might not want to play here, and that's why they ended up being Indianapolis.
Yeah, it is pretty wild, Gary, that a quarterback who had a subpar season last year ends up being the big winner in a trade, right? I mean, yeah. Indy was the place he wanted to go. Much has been made of his close relationship with Frank Reich. Obviously, Reich was there during Wentz's best season, best pro season. And so he ends up in a great location. And the Eagles are left with not a great return, certainly not what they paid to move up to get him when he was drafted. And so they're, you know, coming up short on what they had hoped for because there wasn't a market for him. But because there wasn't a market for him, he ended up at the one place that wanted him and the one place that he really wanted. So it's crazy to compare because you have Deshaun Watson who, and obviously the situations are incredibly different in a lot of different ways, but just looking at it, you have Deshaun Watson who's coming off an excellent season despite his team's record, but an excellent individual season, and Carson Wentz who's coming off a dismal individual season, and Wentz gets out and leaves his former team hanging, and Watson still up in the air.
Yeah, and we're gonna have a little bit on Watson a little bit later in the show here, but just talking about Wentz at this point, I so I guess if you look to this as an optimist, if you are the Indianapolis Colts, we're getting the reunification of Carson Wentz with Frank Reich, and now do you get sort of the 2017 form of Carson Wentz, which, where obviously he was firmly in the MVP discussion before he had the torn ACL. And I guess if nothing else, you certainly have a very good offensive line in Indianapolis. You have some pretty good weapons, and they're all, unlike in Philadelphia, they're all healthy. So I guess, is it right to be bullish, or does this feel kind of like a desperation move that, I mean, look, when you step back, the Colts were in a position where they probably weren't going to, I mean, yes, they could have spent a fortune and moved up 15 picks and gotten in the conversation for some of these rookie quarterbacks, but what are you getting there? They didn't really have options for getting an upgrade at quarterback outside of Wentz. And then the question is Wentz an upgrade?
Right. And these rehabilitation projects for quarterbacks have mixed results, but what gives you optimism is Frank Reich knows exactly what he's getting. So it isn't another team taking a stab on a player who's failed somewhere else, thinking that team didn't know what they were doing, etc. Well, Frank Reich might think that, but he knows it's a player he has direct, intimate experience with, he already has a relationship with. I think what we'll see this season will answer some of the questions of what the heck happened in Philadelphia, because we still don't have a full story. Why did things go so far south? There were reports over the weekend that Peterson and Wentz weren't communicating this past season, and it became clear that Wentz wanted a fresh start, but then they fire Peterson and Wentz still wants a fresh start. So how do you go from that MVP candidate in the 2017 season to being traded with the Eagles, getting little in return? And so I think when we see what happens with Wentz in Indy this season, it will give us a clearer sense of what was there mismanagement of him as a quarterback in Philly? Was there broken trust between him and his teammates? Was there not enough of a offense, the roster built around him? What was the inadequacy of that roster a reason for his failure? I mean, I think this will perhaps answer some of the questions that we all have, because when you see a quarterback have that steep drop off, it's always just so confounding, and you have a lot of variables to sort through. But seeing how he performs back under Reich in Indy will give us a lot of clarity, I think.
I know it's especially confounding because it's not like this is a 36-year-old guy who was good 10 years ago. I mean, he's 28 years old. He was really good 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was largely the same system they ran there. And even if you, I mean, I kind of look back on the 2019 season when they had all these injuries at receiver, and it was easily the slowest receiving core in the NFL by the end of the season. It probably was the worst. It was in the conversation of being the worst. And yet he made it work. He played well in 2019. And I'm not sure, it's almost like to me, the mystery is less about MVP caliber season of 2017 to 2020, what happened? It's almost like what happened between 2019 and 2020? Like, why did this get just, it got exponentially worse as the season went on, and it was just really confusing to watch. And I mean, look, it was probably a confluence of things. It was the offensive line issues, which was far more injured than it had been in recent years. It was the it was the poor skill position players, bad play calling, etc. But it just all added up to a guy who just didn't trust what he was seeing, and then after a while they couldn't trust him, because a lot of his turnovers last year were just a matter of extending plays and just doing ridiculous things.
Yeah, when they went to the Super Bowl, the offensive line was a strength of the team. And over the years, guys get older, injuries pile up. It got to the point where last year it was one of the weaknesses. So that was certainly a factor. But you also just wonder psychologically, the moment that Nick Foles takes over as a backup and wins the Super Bowl, and Wentz is pushed to the side for the end of that season, did that sort of make it inevitable that he would need a fresh start at some point? I mean, I think watching that unfold, we had a curiosity, like, how will this affect Wentz? Because I think most of us could think, not certainly as an NFL quarterback, but just what that feeling would be like, right? You're in a position and something knocks you out of this position, and then the guy behind you comes in and wins a championship or gets some great success. I mean, I think a lot of people can think, oh my gosh, that would be an awful feeling. And certainly there were a lot of reports about Wentz losing the locker room in the subsequent years, and that he wasn't the guy that they believed in. And did that crack his confidence further? Did that not allow him to retake that role? So there were a lot of things that happened in the subsequent years, but certainly one of the more bizarre decline. I don't want to say decline, because again, he's so young and it was a short period of time, but drop-offs, I don't know.
Fallings off. Let's go with that.
Fallings off, great.
It is. It really is. I mean, gosh, when you step back, Wentz's entire run in Philadelphia was just, the twists and turns were incredible. I mean, he comes out of North Dakota State. He ends up getting the starting job week one, which surprises everyone. They move on from Sam Bradford. And then he goes MVP season. I mean, you know, the old saying is the most popular guy in any city is the backup quarterback. And the backup quarterback steps in and wins the Super Bowl. And then he has to come back from that. And then he gets benched a second time. It just, and all by the age of 28. And it was just such a wild ride when it was all said and done. And maybe if nothing else, you just find a certain level of stability in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, look, there's, you know, Jacob Eason is probably not pushing him for the starting job anytime soon. I was honestly wondering if they bring Jacoby Brissett back, because Jacoby Brissett, along with, I personally very much like Jacoby Brissett and think he should be starting somewhere, but Jacoby Brissett has this reputation as just being like the mayor of that locker room, like the most popular guy in that locker room. And it's just kind of like, do you want to tempt fate again, especially if you're factoring in, you know, Connor Orr had written about this. That is a, there's an escalator on that 2022 pick. If they end up, it's if he plays 75% of the snaps, or if he plays 70% and they make the playoffs. But if they're sitting at 6-8 or something, does that change your calculus now?
That's another good question. Yeah, it's I don't know what to expect out of Indy this season. And I honestly didn't have high hopes for them last season. I didn't think the Rivers experiment would work, given kind of the drop off we saw from him at the end of his time with the Chargers. So I underestimated them last year, so I'm not going to do that again. And I actually think this might work out. I think he certainly needed a fresh start, and I think the trust with his head coach can go a really long way to repairing a quarterback's confidence. You know, I don't, it's not the same thing, because kickers have this very like set mental routine, and you know, you get off. But you think about the kickers who are drafted in a high round, like Aguayo, the most recent one, and you hear of, you know, what that does mentally, the pressure that comes with it. And, you know, I sort of think about that with Wentz in terms of that pressure that came after Foles won a Super Bowl and trying to come in and live up to what had happened this magical season the year before. And so you just wonder, getting out of Philly, you know, Philly is a tough media market. Indianapolis is at the other end of the spectrum. So maybe it's kind of a way for him to just kind of go under the radar a little bit.
It is. When it's all said and done, Carson Wentz gets to the place he's going. The Colts probably overpay a little bit. Again, maybe someone else gets in on the market later in the offseason. But considering that they were the only team bidding, the fact that the Colts ended up giving up a second-round pick and a second-rounder that can become a first-rounder, that's kind of a big bounty at this point. So the Eagles think it's not enough, and they end up settling for it. And I don't know, I guess both teams are slightly unhappy with how it all played out. As far as the Eagles go, Jalen Hurts right now is the guy there. Les Bowen at the Philadelphia Inquirer had reported, and this is another team's executive, to be clear, but this other team's executive said that he thought the Eagles would take a quarterback number six. We'll see who's available there. More than anything, we'll see. It depends on whether the Eagles like the quarterbacks in this draft class. If they don't, then they probably shouldn't take one. But Jalen Hurts, I don't think by any stretch of the imagination is locked in as the Eagles guy. I think they're open to him becoming the guy, and I think what you saw in the month sort of tryout he had last year, he's kind of the guy we all thought he was, you know, intriguing talent, probably not quite there as far as some of the subtle nuances of playing the position go, and he has a chance to get better, and will he? But I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, it wouldn't be shocking to see them take a quarterback at number six. But as you said, Gary, do they like the person that's there at number six? Can they get a good quarterback at number six? I'm not sure. So I think that'll dictate the decision there. But yeah, it's hard to imagine that they go into the season. I mean, I don't think they'll go into the season saying this is Hurts's job. And just going, you know, we totally didn't even mention the Hurts factor in talking about what was going on with Wentz's potential, you know, the psychological side of the game too. I mean, that draft pick last year really seemed to impact him, and not in a good way. Unlike Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love, right, where it just kind of motivated him and made him ticked off and turned into an MVP season for him. If the Hurts pick had any effect, it would have been a negative one.
The opposite.
On Wentz.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, I did butcher that. It's a third round pick going to the Eagles this year. And then the 2022 pick is a second rounder that can escalate to a first rounder, just to be clear on that. But yeah, and that's the other, that's what people always lose track. All this like, well, they got to take a quarterback. It's like, well, do they like the quarterbacks? They shouldn't take a guy they don't like, even if we in the media sort of aggregating all the media pundit rankings believe that a guy is a high first round pick. Maybe they don't feel that way, and if they feel that way, they shouldn't take him. And of course, you're probably looking at that trio of Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, and Trey Lance. I like all those guys, but they're probably not going to ask me for my opinion.
Well, and you know, if they would have to trade up for someone, which is a potential, right? If they liked one of those guys, or let's say they liked all three of those guys, but mm-hmm. to get one of those three guys, you would have to move up. Would they want to, given that they didn't get the return back for Wentz that they may have been hoping for? Or do you say, hey, we're close, we're in the sixth slot right now, it's better than trying to move up from 15 or whatever the case may be, so let's do it now. I mean, I think there's a lot of things in play, but it wouldn't be shocking to see them take a quarterback. But to do so, they might have to move up.
All right, Jenny, we got plenty more quarterbacks to talk in just a little bit, but right now it is time for the SI Fantasy segment presented by DraftKings. I'm once again joined by Michael Fabiano, and Fabs, I mean, we got to start with Carson Wentz as well. I mean, this is yet another spin of the quarterback carousel here, and Wentz, MVP-type player in 2017, is there any reason to be bullish about him, particularly with his trade?
I think it's the best case scenario, right? Wentz goes to a team that's got a lot of young talent, has a pretty good offensive line. They'll have to replace Anthony Costanzo, of course, who mm-hmm. retired. And he's back with Frank Reich, who was the OC in Philadelphia when Wentz had that amazing 2017 season. And like, I get it. He was bad last year. Like there's no ifs, and or buts. He was bad. He was throwing too many interceptions. His completion percentage was down for the third. He was bad, but he's still young. He's fixable.
Yeah.
And let's not forget, in 2019, he was the QB10 in fantasy. Like, he wasn't crap. So as bad as he was, and he's not going to be a QB1 in fantasy, he won't be drafted as such.
Mm-hmm.
He's in a good spot. He really landed in a best case scenario. This is one of my wish list pieces from 2021. I wanted Wentz to go to the Colts, and I got my wish. So late round pick, QB2. I have him ranked as my QB20 right now. But
okay,
could he be a top 15 quarterback? Yeah, sure. Will Indianapolis need him to be a top 15 quarterback? Statistically, no, because that offense is going to run through Jonathan Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
The Colts also have some money to spend. T.Y. Hilton's a free agent. They could potentially bring him back. But you got Michael Pittman Jr., who's a young guy. Paris Campbell's very young, but he can't stay injured. He can't stay free of those injuries. But if he could, mm-hmm. you got some young talent there. Now, this also is very good, of course, for Jalen Hurts. We've heard that the Eagles may be bringing in competition for him. And okay, that's fine. But Hurts is one of my favorite second-year players going into 2021. He started and finished three games as a rookie. He averaged over 25 points a game. He rushed for almost 80 yards a game. I don't think that those two totals are going to be something that he'll replicate in 2021 as a starter. But can he give me 800 yards and 4 to 5 touchdowns on the ground? Heck yeah, he can. And even if his passing totals are just average, because of the rushing success, he's got a chance to be a top 12 quarterback. And like, he's got accuracy issues. There are things that he needs to fix from a passing standpoint. But we just saw that with Josh Allen this past season. I'm not saying Hurts is going to be as good as Allen was. But what was Allen's big bugaboo coming out of college? Not accurate. His accuracy was pretty damn good this past season when they had Stephon Diggs in there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he was great. And Philadelphia is going to bring in young talent. DeSean Jackson's not back. Alshon Jeffrey, I don't think he'll be back. Zach Ertz, I don't think he'll be back. So you'll have Jalen Reagor's, you've got Dallas Goedert and Miles Sanders. And I wouldn't be surprised if they took a wide receiver with that high first round pick. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll be Ja'Marr Chase. Maybe it'll be Devonta Smith. Depends on who maybe isn't on the board at that point. Miami could take a wide receiver ahead of them at 3. But Philadelphia's offense could be very fantasy friendly. And those mobile quarterbacks, I've been saying it for a long, long time, and I'll continue to say it for a long, long time. Those guys have added value. And I always bring up the Tim Tebow example, and I bring up the Terrell Pryor example. You don't necessarily have to be the best passer in the world. If you can run with the football at the quarterback position, you're going to get the job done. And Jalen Hurts, if I go into 14 drafts, and that's probably about the number of leagues that I'll be in next season, and Jalen Hurts is my starting quarterback in 7 of them, I'll be thrilled.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't have had to use a lot of draft capital on him. And I love his upside because he can run.
Well, let's, I'm glad you touched on the draft a little bit. You rolled out your fantasy football centric first round mock draft here. And I want to touch on the running backs and receivers, but mm-hmm. I do want to start off with, look, it's quarterbacks. People don't get as enthused about quarterbacks in fantasy football, but he is the one guy who we can kind of lock in with his team at this point, barring some very, very unforeseen circumstances. Trevor Lawrence is going to be selected by the Jaguars first overall. Mm-hmm. What do you consider Lawrence's upside here? Obviously no one's taking him as QB1, but is he a guy who, maybe you take him as sort of that high upside QB2 on your roster, and then maybe you're looking at a top 10 quarterback by the end of this season?
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think top 10 could be tough to accomplish, but top 12, I mean, in that ballpark, mm-hmm. it depends on what Jacksonville does around him, right? So you've got DJ Chark, you've got LaVisca Chenault, Chris Connolly is a free agent, and D.D. Westbrook's a free agent, and Keelan Cole's a free agent. They don't really have a tight end that can make plays. What do they do in the offseason, right? Do they sign Allen Robinson? Do they sign a Kenny Galladay? Do they bring in a top name wideout to be the number one option for Trevor Lawrence? You've already got a good back in James Robinson. The offensive line is not terrible. They could potentially add some pieces in the draft to improve that, because you can never have enough depth at mm-hmm. offensive line. Just ask the Chiefs. And whatever they do, if they play their cards right and they have money to spend, yeah, Lawrence could be a top 12 quarterback without question. Daniel Jeremiah, my pal from NFL Network, was on my SiriusXM radio show last week. You know, I asked him point blank. He also covers the Chargers. He's one of their radio play-by-play guys.
Yep.
With Matt Money Smith. And I said, can Lawrence be as good as Herbert was? Because Herbert was a top 10 quarterback as a rookie. And DJ said, it really all depends on what they do. What do they bring in? What do they give him? Is DJ Chark enough right now, and LaVisca Chenault enough right now? They've got money to spend. They want to make a splash. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see Allen Robinson go back to Jacksonville. He'd be a great fit there.
Yeah.
So it depends on what he's got around him, but is a top 12 finish out of the realm of possibility? in this day and age, no, it's not.
I like it. I love Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, dude, I mean,
so freaking good.
He is the best quarterback prospect to come out of college since Andrew Luck.
Yeah. Yep.
And Andrew Luck was very good before he ultimately retired early. He was a tremendous fantasy quarterback. And I think Jacksonville's going in the right direction. Like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if in Lawrence's rookie year, the Jaguars are, you know, a 500 team, maybe a 9-win team. I don't know if they're pushing for a playoff berth. They have other deficiencies as well, but they're going to be competitive. And I think they're going to go from a team that wasn't very fantasy friendly to suddenly one that could be extremely fantasy friendly.
All right, let's sort of rapid fire these receivers and running backs. I'll sort of mm-hmm. throw them at you, and you can, you know what? I'm not even going to put any parameters on this. Let's just do it.
Yeah.
Let's just say. All right, Dolphins, third pick, Ja'Marr Chase, the LSU receiver here.
They need to add weapons for Tua Tagovailoa. Devontae Parker is there. Mike Gesicki is there. They need more. Tua wasn't great as a rookie, but, I mean, typically rookie quarterbacks are not Justin Herbert. I mean, like, they don't come in and do that. So you got to give the kid a break. You got to give him a chance. And you got to add weapons. And Chase is arguably the top wide receiver in this class. So you pair him with Parker and Gesicki. And I also would like to see them go out and get a running back in this draft, which I also put in the first round because they have two first-round picks. Mm-hmm. And suddenly the Dolphins looking like a pretty good team for fantasy fans.
Eagles with a 6th pick, Devontae Smith, the receiver from Alabama, Heisman winner.
Yeah, and as I mentioned earlier, Jackson's gone, Ertz could be gone, Jeffrey could be gone, and they need pass-catching weapons for Jalen Hurts. And so you bring in Smith, he'd start opposite Rieger. You'd mm-hmm. have Goddard in the mix and Miles Sanders, and maybe you got something there.
The Lions, blank slate here at number 7. They take Jalen Waddle, the receiver from Alabama. Jalen Waddle, if Jalen Waddle didn't get hurt last year, he might be in this wide receiver one conversation.
Right, without question. So the Lions have all of their free agent wide receivers in question here, right? Like, Kenny Galladay's no lock to be back. Marvin Jones, most people think he's gone. Danny Amendola's no lock to be back. And I would suggest Galladay would stay. Maybe they tag him. This is his best fantasy scenario, is to stay in mm-hmm. Detroit. But you bring in Waddle, and suddenly you got a number 2, and Jared Goff's got some weapons with TJ Hawkinson and DeAndre Swift. I mean, I don't know how many games the Lions are going to win. And as much as I don't like Goff as a fantasy quarterback, dude, I mean, you know, Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp are pretty good fantasy wide receivers. I mean,
yeah.
Cooper Kupp was an elite fantasy wide receiver for some time with Jared Goff under center. So Goff might not be a great quarterback. Doesn't mean that the players around him can't put up good numbers. And that would be a very, very quick path to targets if Waddle ended up in Detroit.
I'll throw in, I think, one of your two tight ends in the first round here. This is, of course, Kyle Pitts, 8 to the Panthers.
Yeah, he's awesome, dude. Mm-hmm. And again, it's going to be hard for me to rank him no matter where he lands because I know how good he is, but I know rookie tight ends typically do nothing. For every Evan Engram who had a great rookie campaign, you know, there's 100 other guys out there who are, you know, like TJ Hawkinson. They're like, first season,
Yep. You know,
and then they bust out. So, but Carolina needs weapons in the passing game. Curtis Samuel's a free agent. Maybe they don't bring him back. You got Robbie Anderson. You got DJ Moore. You got Christian McCaffrey. And suddenly you bring in a Pitts, and boy, he's going to create mismatches all over the place for you. He's just a super talented guy, and Ian Thomas has not worked out. So I don't know who the quarterback's going to be at Carolina. I guess right now we could assume it's Bridgewater. But even if Samuel's gone, I think this is – and Samuel was a pretty big part of that offense in the second half of the season. He was really good from a fantasy perspective. He's gone. They bring in Pitts. Boom. You got a playmaker.
Giants at 11. The Giants and their team full of complimentary receivers here. They you haven't taken Kadarius Toney, the Florida receiver, explosive guy, play some slot.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Because the Giants need to give Daniel Jones weapons. You got Saquon coming back. You know, Evan Engram didn't have a great season, but I mean, he's still to me a pretty good offensive option there. And you know, Sterling Shepard is what he is. Darius Slayton really didn't produce this past season. I think a lot of folks in fantasy land were disappointed with him. You got to add weapons, and wide receiver is the glaring void on offense for the G-men. Could they potentially go to help, you know, their offensive line? I mean, sure. They invested in that last year though, and I think it'll be better in 2021. So Kadarius Toney, I mean, people have compared him, and you know how the comparisons go these days. They've compared him to like Tyreek Hill, but will he be Tyreek Hill? I mean, that's going to be tough, but I still feel like he could make an impact for the Giants. And so he's a domino effect guy too, because not only could he have some late round value in redrafts, but he could also potentially help Daniel Jones in terms of his own value.
Speed here at 17. Raiders take a Tutu Atwell from a Louisville diminutive burner.
Yeah, and I mean, Atwell, I don't know that he's a first-round pick, but again, this isn't about whether a player is a first-round pick. It's more about the best players, the positions that these teams need to make their fantasy squads better. And what do the Raiders love? Speed. And that's why I says, well, Atwell's a damn fast guy, right? He's, mm-hmm. he's extremely fast. They did draft Ruggs and Edwards last year, but Tyrell Williams is gone. Nelson Aguilar is a free agent. I think they'd probably go the free agency route and try to get Juju. I wouldn't be surprised if the Raiders had Juju, in which case, of course, a guy like Atwell wouldn't be someone that they would need. But if they do use the draft to improve their offense, they don't need a running back. They don't need a quarterback. They don't need a tight end. You know, every team could use help on the offensive line, but the Raiders are potentially going to lose, two wide receivers off that roster.
Yep.
Williams gone, and again, and Aguilar, who is their number one wide receiver last year, is going to be a free agent.
Travis Etienne, the home run hitting running back here from Clemson to the Dolphins at 18.
And flip a coin here. You can get Etienne, or you can get, you know, Najee Harris.
Yep.
I'll take either one in Miami. And like Miles Gaskin's a good player. He played very well last season. He really did. He's not on the same level as Etienne or Harris. And Etienne, this dude's a game changer. Mm-hmm. And so you put him in that backfield and think about the scenario. Tua, you got Chase, Parker, Gesicki, and Etienne. Giddy up, man. Suddenly the Dolphins are looking pretty good. A lot of good young talent on that offense. Their defense is very good. They need to focus on making that offense better.
So we have Terrace Marshall Jr. to the Washington football team with, quarterback to be announced.
Yeah, I'm not sure who's going to be the quarterback there for the football team or whatever they're going to be called next season. But they need offensive weapons. They got their running back in Antonio Gibson in last year's draft. They got their number one wide receiver, Terry McLaurin, a couple of seasons back. Mm-hmm. But they don't have that good number two.
Yeah.
Logan Thomas had a good second half of the season, so maybe he's going to be in the mix as well. But Marshall would come right in and fit well as potentially a number two wide receiver there in Washington. And whoever the quarterback's going to be, whether it's, you know, Taylor Heinicke or Alex Smith, or, you know, maybe they sign someone. I don't know who they could potentially trade for. I mean, who knows? But that would certainly improve the stock of that Washington offense in terms of the passing game.
And the Bears at 20, Elijah Moore, fast and feisty.
Yep.
A little bit small, but that's okay. Yep. Wide receiver out of Ole Miss.
The Bears may or may not get Allen Robinson to be back. He's either going to get, he could get tagged, but if he doesn't get tagged, I'd say he's gone. And I'd rather see him in Jacksonville, to be honest with you. But I mean, also Robinson's been a top 10 quarterback, wide receiver the last 2 years with kind of crappy quarterback play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like if he stays in Chicago, it's not the worst thing in the world from a fantasy perspective. But if the Bears do lose him, Anthony Miller, he wasn't all that great this past season. I know they like Darnell Mooney. But Moore could potentially come in and see a decent target share if Robinson ultimately is no longer in Chicago.
Jets at 23, Najee Harris there. Mike LaFleur, obviously the new offensive boss there.
Yep.
for the Jets.
And again, doesn't matter if it's Harris or Etienne, whoever the Jets get at the running back position, and maybe they don't draft a running back in the first round. They're going to draft a running back, though.
Yep.
LaMichael Perine? No. Frank Gore's gone. Ty Johnson, no. I mean, yeah. Like, I mean, they're not bringing these guys back to be anything but complimentary or depth pieces. That's it. And you bring in Harris, you draft a quarterback, right? Maybe it's Zach Wilson, maybe it's Justin Fields with that second overall pick. and you add some pieces at the wide receiver position, and the Jets have money to spend, and maybe suddenly the Jets are fantasy friendly. Maybe not as fantasy friendly as you know the Chiefs, of course.
Yeah.
But last year they were brutal. Like outside of Jamison Crowder, I mean, they had nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. So the Jets need to focus on getting the offense better. They need to do for whoever their quarterback is going to be what they didn't do for Sam Darnold. Get him weapons.
And we have a quintet of receivers here, starting at 25 with the Jaguars. Rashad Bateman here.
And Bateman is he's a guy whose stock is rising. Mm-hmm. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if he was a first-round pick. If the Jaguars decide to build via the draft and they don't go after a big-name wide receiver as a free agent, which I kind of still think they're going to, Bateman would be a pretty nice option to potentially push for a number three spot in the rotation there. You'd have Chark. You'd have Laviska Shenault, who a lot of us in fantasy like. And then behind them, they have three wide receivers, again, who are going to be free agents. So Bateman could come right in and potentially see a decent target share. And the quarterback situation, you know, improved to Trevor Lawrence. So who knows?
Browns, Rondale Moore. Purdue guy opt out last year, but boy, he was a playmaker there.
Another guy who could be a first round pick. OBJ's coming off of an ACL repair. Rashad Higgins is a free agent. They don't need a quarterback. They don't need a running back. They don't need a tight end. Their offensive line's pretty good. This is really the only position that the Browns could target in the first round on the offensive side of the football. Ultimately, I don't know that they'll go in this direction. I mean, they could potentially be looking more on the defensive side, but Moore would be a nice addition to the Browns or any of these teams that need a wide receiver.
Tylan Wallace to the Ravens, the Oklahoma State receiver.
Another situation where you don't need a quarterback, you don't need a tight end, you don't need running backs. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to bring back Gus Edwards as a free agent, and he'll be the number two guy behind J.K. Dobbins. But they do need help at wide receiver. Like Hollywood Brown's been okay, but he's not a number one. And Tywan Wallace would come in and compete with Devin Duvernay and Miles Boykin for targets behind Hollywood. So the Ravens, if they decide not to go the free agency route, they could bring in a guy like Wallace to compete for a part of that target share next season and into the future.
At 28, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I love this fit with the Saints. Just an incredibly competitive catch-and-run guy.
Yeah, this is Equanimeous's brother. The St. Browns, they grace their children with very interesting names. Mm-hmm. Equanimeous and Amon-Ra. I love it. Michael Thomas is coming off a crappy year. Emmanuel Sanders is going to be 34 going into next season. Tre'Quan Smith hasn't really been great. So they don't need running backs. They're not going to draft it unless like Mac Jones falls. I don't see them taking a quarterback in the first round. So really their need is wide receiver. And I think St. Brown could be a good fit there. Just everything in New Orleans depends on who the quarterback, even down to Alvin Kamara's true value. Who's the quarterback going to be? Is it going to be Taysom? Is it going to be Jameis? Yeah. What are they going to do? A lot of questions there.
Packers at 29, Tamarion Terry, Florida State receiver, big speed size dude there.
Yeah, this is one of those scenarios where they're going to appease Aaron Rodgers, kind of make him happy, give him a piece, right? Davante Adams is always going to be the guy there. You've got Alan Lazard, who's an exclusive rights free agent, Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I mean, he had a couple of good games, but he's not a true playmaking type every week. Mm-hmm. So you know, you bring in Terry. That they're pretty good at tight end now with the with the breakout season of Robert Tonyan, and they've got Jay Sternberger there as well. I mean, the offensive line could always use help, but I went with wide receiver here because it's probably the position the Packers should have gone after last season. Although Rodgers didn't really need it, he proved it because he had a massive season.
And finally, the last of our running back, receiver, tight end group here in this fantasy-centric mock, we have the Bills at 30 taking Javonte Williams, the North Carolina running back.
So they've taken a running back in each of the last two drafts, not first round, but you know they took Devin Singletary a couple of years ago. They took Zach Moss mm-hmm. last year. And like I'm not saying that these guys suck. I mean, like, you know, but I just don't think that – I don't know that they're each that explosive potential number one that Williams could be. And Williams is his stock is rising. He's a talented guy. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Bills go out, bring in a running back, and they don't need help anywhere else. I mean, maybe you could say tight end. Is there a tight end that's worth a first-round pick past Kyle Pitts? I don't think so. So you bring in Williams to compete for that starting job with Singletary and Moss, and maybe he's that added weapon they have, because right now the running game is not great in Buffalo. The passing game is great. The running game's only good as so far as Josh Allen getting the job done. I'd like to see them get another running back who could potentially be the guy.
All right, Fabs. We'll have you back here next week, but if you can't wait for that, SI Fantasy Podcast, SI.com/fantasy. He's there all the time, 24/7, never stops working. Michael Fabiano, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, my brother.
So let's take a look at what happened with the Colts if they hadn't made this move there, because there are a couple teams, Jenny. I'll just, you know, these are teams who are picking in the mid first round. There are not a whole lot of sparkling free agent options out there. We know Deshaun Watson is available. Sam Darnold, depending on what other teams do, maybe Tua, maybe Garoppolo, maybe Locke become available, but it is going to be tough for teams that aren't picking in the top 10 and don't have the ability to maybe jump up and get that number three pick out of Miami or whatever it might be. The Colts were in that class. The Patriots, Washington, and Chicago are all there too. Those are all teams that really don't have quarterback options in-house at this point. So it just kind of becomes like, if you're the Colts, you're taking a risk here with Wentz, and you realize that, but it might be the way to do it, because, again, the top free agents here, you're looking at Dak Prescott, who's probably going to be retained one way or another in Dallas. Then you're looking at Jacoby Brissett, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, Mitchell Trubisky, Andy Dalton are probably your guys who are legitimate starting candidates. And maybe, you know, Alabama's Mac Jones might be available in the middle of the first round if someone likes him particularly. But it's just really tough to figure out how one of those teams, if they don't end up getting, you know, winning the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes at this point, it's just tough to see how they're going to end up upgrading. And I will get way ahead of myself here and way ahead of everybody and make a claim that probably won't hold true in a year. But the 2022 quarterback class doesn't look very good draft-wise and free agent-wise. Again, maybe Dak Prescott gets out there, but that's kind of it.
So your thought is teams need to make a move this year. But
it seems like there should be an urgency for it.
Right, I see. Well, I was saying to you as we were going over the show notes, Gary, that I never get too wrapped up in, I mean, not like I'm sitting here picking quarterbacks for a team, but this idea that like next year's draft class won't be good, so you have to get one now. I know that teams talk about this and they discuss and map out who will be available this year versus next year. But I do think we often see quarterbacks come out of nowhere. And I know teams prefer not to draft, say, a one-year starter or whatever the case may be. But we do see rankings change. We do see depth of the position change. College players can develop rapidly. So I'm not ready to say there won't be enough options next year, but I do agree, like, there are so many teams with an uncertainty at the position, and there aren't enough good players to fill it. Now, we have been talking a lot recently, Gary, about this era of quarterback empowerment and guys pushing back on the organization and maybe forcing their way out. So if a year ago you had said Wentz would be traded, Deshaun Watson would want to be traded, that there would be conversations about Russell Wilson, well, that one might not have been. That one we would have believed a year ago, I think. But the others, you know, there just have been a lot of changes that have taken place in the last couple months. So who knows what will happen a year from now?
That is true. And certainly Zach Wilson, I mean, there were people wondering if he'd win the starting job again at BYU this time last year. So, you know, he's a guy who came out of nowhere. We saw, I guess the 2022 draft class kind of reminds me of the one in 2019, which all of a sudden Kyler Murray got involved after his breakout year at Oklahoma, and then all of a sudden that quarterback class looked a lot better than it was. So there's always that chance that somebody emerges as a top of the draft class type of guy when it's all said and done. But I'm also wondering, like, how does this play into? And look, who knows what the Texans want to do or what they're going to do or what their logic is in anything that they do at this point. But if they are going to move Deshaun Watson, I almost feel like a deadline, an artificial deadline, but a deadline has to be before the draft because you can, you know, you can get the number two pick and know who you're going to end up taking. You can get a high first round pick, or if they liked someone like Tua or they like someone like Darnold or whoever it might be, you can ensure what you're getting back. If you end up saying, okay, we're going to wait into the season and, you know, worst case scenario is we'll trade him next offseason after we suffer through another terrible year and then we'll draft someone or whatever it might end up being, it just doesn't really add up to me. And again, they are, I'd think public relations would play into it to an extent, but again, with the way they've operated, maybe it doesn't. But I just can't really picture them going through this without knowing who they can get for their next guy and knowing that maybe having the number one overall pick of the 2022 draft is not going to be wonderful.
Right. No, that's totally fair. And I'm going to contradict myself again. I mean, not just because I heard your great points, but I can remember a recent case where a top quarterback came out of nowhere and his name was Mitchell Trubisky. He was a one-year starter at UNC, and that has not worked out well. So you can see the perils of falling in love with a guy that comes out of nowhere in college. But yes, back to the Texans. You know, you do wonder if Watson is going to do something to put pressure on the team more publicly than he has to get things moving. I mean, I can imagine that he's frustrated, again, even though they're different situations, but he must be frustrated seeing Wentz get a fresh start and be moved. And that situation, I mean, we discussed Wentz in depth earlier, but it's, you know, the organization, basically the quarterback, said his relationship with the team was past the point of no return, and they agreed and they moved him. I mean, it's not that dissimilar to Watson, but in Watson's case, the Texans aren't at this point willing to move him. So what will it take for that move to happen? And yes, I do wonder if there is some kind of public crossing of the Rubicon moment where there would be absolutely be no turning back.
I really can't remember. And I feel like over the years, anytime there's been a player holdout or a threat of holdout, I feel like the natural inclination for the public at large, and this is just my impression, this is not through any sort of scientific polling, but I feel like it automatically sides with the team because it's kind of like, mm-hmm. well, yeah, he's under contract and et cetera. You know, he should just do his job, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember the public reaction being so heavily in favor of the player mm-hmm. versus the team. And again, I'm not sure what ultimately pressures the team into doing something about it, because they seem to be impervious isn't the word, but they just don't seem to be paying any attention to what anyone thinks or says about what they do.
You're right. And, you know, some kind of public declaration might not change things beyond what they already are. I mean, you're right. It's people are siding with Watson. I mean, even his own teammates want him to get a fresh start. Like, even his own teammates are, they so respect and admire him, and they understand that he wants to go somewhere else. And I'm sure many of them have similar feelings to those that he has. So this is a very unique situation. It's also a different time too. I mean, you're right. It's always so frustrating, Gary, to see people side with the institutions. It never has made any sense to me, right? Why are you siding with the $1 billion institution, whether it's a mm-hmm. team or the NFL versus the player who's taking a stand? I think more of us can relate to the player who's like the employee that's trying to stand up for better working conditions or whatever the case is, we should be able to relate more to the player. But because things have been so bad with the Texans and there is a public understanding of the turmoil within the organization, and also it's a shifting era where I think there is more respect and understanding of players speaking up and trying to execute their power a little bit.
And Connor Orr, of course, wrote about it in the upcoming March issue of Sports Illustrated, and it ran online last week, so you can find it right now if you want to, about the increased empowerment of especially superstar quarterbacks in the league. But there was also for years this sort of, you know, this line of thinking of, oh, well, I mean, a guy with a contract like that, untradeable, like it, you can't do anything about it. Just you shrug your shoulders. Well, we saw Wentz get moved. We saw Jared Goff get moved. I mean, those contracts are very much movable if you want to move them or if someone makes you move them. So that whole argument kind of went out the window a little bit with what we saw even in the last 2 weeks. I don't want to completely blow up the last 2 weeks and say this was like the most important time in the history of NFL player management relations or whatever it was, but it just seems significant what has gone down between the Stafford trade, the Watson trade demand, and seeing Wentz and Goff, who, again, their big mega extensions had literally not kicked in yet, and they were traded before they did. I mean, you can move these guys if you have the proper inspiration to move them.
Yeah, and it really does feel like a shift. I mean, you don't want to get ahead of things and, as you said, make it into something that it's not. Only time will tell, but it does feel like a shift. And back to your earlier question, what will it take for the Texans to kind of join the movement, if you will? I don't know. I mean, certainly Watson could take the steps that lots of players have taken in the past. You know, first you don't show up to the offseason program, then you don't show up into training camp. But it seems like it would be better for everyone to get this resolved sooner than later. I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't be. I mean,
It's never going to be good for the Texans.
I was just going to say, it's never going to be good for the Texans. So as soon as that left my mouth, I'm like, well, it's actually not great for them, but the alternative isn't great either. So they're in a bad position.
Some kind of hypnotist, getting into Deshaun Watson's camp or something and making him forget about everything that happened over the last 6 months. I feel like the draft is just sort of the artificial deadline because you want to make sure you can get that next guy in there. And it would be downright irresponsible for them to not be doing work on the quarterbacks coming out this year in anticipation of possibly getting one of those top picks. But, they're not going to have to take a discount on Deshaun Watson. There's going to be a third of the league trying to get him, and they can kind of name their price at this point, even if that price does not ultimately add up to the value that a 25-year-old franchise quarterback gives your team. But, Jenny, I thought we'd finish with a fun game that is actually not fun at all.
Oh, no.
I want to look at, again, the three teams I brought up, the Patriots, the football team apparently is what they will be in 2021 once again, and the Bears, who are all kind of out of range for those top of the draft quarterbacks. You know, yeah, you can package and move your way up, so that's a possibility there. But if those teams are not able to do that and do not end up getting a Deshaun Watson type, the guys you're looking at in free agency: Brissett, Fitzpatrick, Jameis Winston, Cam Newton, Trubisky, Andy Dalton. Out of that list, who would you get most excited about? Let's just say it that way, because it depends on what team they land on and a lot of other stuff. But who would you take first out of that crew of six?
Brissett.
Me too. You just said it because you knew I'd say it.
Well, you did tip your hand earlier, but that's who I would have said anyway. And I would say number two would be Cam. I didn't see his comments in full, but I think he referenced that the early season COVID, having COVID early in the season affected him the rest of the year. And I had sort of wondered that, you know, were there lingering effects and did it interfere with his preparation? And I just would be interested in seeing him have another chance this year. So I would say Brissett, then Cam.
Okay. I think I agree with that.
I mean, I think we've talked in depth on this show, and you have a very smart take on Jameis that you just, when you have that fundamental flaw of not being able to see the field, you just can't fix it. So I will always be skeptical of Jameis's ability to be a starter in this league.
If he makes it work, he's going to get such a big endorsement deal from the LASIK people.
Yeah, but that, you know, that always seemed a little bit exaggerated to me, Gary.
It seemed too cartoonish.
Yeah, it really did.
Like he didn't want to wear his glasses because he looked like a nerd or something. Like it just didn't really make sense when it was all said and done.
I mean, Fitzpatrick is good in a role like you had in Miami this past year, sort of a veteran bridge guy till you're ready to play the rookie. But Fitzmagic always eventually runs out.
I know. I feel like he played the perfect number of snaps for the Dolphins last year.
Yes.
Like, if he played one more snap, it was going to be like 12 consecutive like pick sixes.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a point where the clock strikes midnight.
All right, Jenny. Well, the clock has struck, I don't know, whatever the end of the show is. And that is my nifty transition to wrap things up. But thanks again for joining us. You will be back with Connor on the Weak Side podcast coming out on Tuesday. And we have plenty more offseason to go here.
Now we've all turned into pumpkins, Gary.
Oh, that was much better than mine. The MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast is Jenny Brentis and me, Gary Gremling. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Mark Ravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Andy Benoit is the founder of the MMQB NFL Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed as well as the feeds for the Weekside Podcast and the Albert Breer Show. They're all for free on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, please leave a rating and review for all of them. It really does help other people find the shows, which are also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.